Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that always casts its vote using an antique fountain pen. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hello!
Now, this is our 50th episode, listeners. You can probably, if you put them back to back, you could listen to us on loop for a day. Apparently when Guantanamo's reopened, that's probably what they'll do.
God, that would... Even I don't want to listen to that.
And I think we thought, if we were planning a 50th episode, it would be a nice, quiet, sedate, self-congratulatory affair. And instead, it's one that we're shoehorning in the middle of an election campaign when we'd rather just sleep. But what instead we're going to do, it's going to be another mini-sode, which we're trying to do a few of and release in the week. And it's going to be an homage to our first podcast. Now, that was called Democracy at Some Point, and it concentrated on electoral reform issues. That didn't quite become the cult hit that this one has. So what we're going to do is talk about the party's proposals for democracy in their manifestos. So, I mean, last year the British public voted to take back control. Do the parties pledge to bring back the power to the people? Let's begin with the Tory manifesto. It pledges to, and I quote, to retain the traditional method of voting by pencil and paper, which is a pledge to retain something that literally nobody is proposing to change.
Yeah, I mean, electronic voting is one of those things which comes up reasonably frequently in discussions of how you could reform democracy or make it easier for people to vote or whatever. But no one is actually proposing to actually change the kind of the actual core method that people vote by. So the fact that this has been put in here is odd, which makes me think there's some report somewhere they've stumbled across or have got hidden somewhere in government which actually is making that suggestion, which might come out after the election.
Well, do you think that it's a reference to the fact that in the referendum last year people thought that you should vote in pen, not paper, because MFI might rub out the ballots or something? There was that insane conspiracy theory.
I don't know. I mean, if there was going to be a reference to something like that, you'd expect it to be, and we're going to provide pens rather than pencils or whatever, rather than maintaining the traditional way of doing it, which is with a pencil.
I can't tell if it's just, and there's not much of democratic reform stuff in all the manifestos. We'll talk maybe about why that is later. But I wonder if it's just the party's manifesto. There's like, we need to fill a page with democracy. What do you vote with? The pencil? Right, put that in. We'll keep the pencils. We'll keep polling stations as well. Tory manifesto also mentions House of Lords reform, but says it's not a priority. It seems to fall short of democratising the chamber. It seems to be about maybe getting rid of the numbers. I think the number of the House of Lords, it's about half the population of Britain, I think, now is in the Lords, isn't it?
Yeah, seems to be these days.
Most of the parties do say that they'd like to reform the Lords. Labour, I think, in its last 14 manifestos, has said that it wants to bring in an elected chamber, and yet somehow
it's never quite managed it, have they?
No. You could say that Tony Blair's manifesto was more radical than Jeremy Corbyn's when it comes to democracy issues. And I assume that will be a quote that is taken out of context at some point. So, you know, you can have that one for free. The interesting thing in terms of voting systems in the Tory manifesto is that they want to change the electoral system for PCCs, sorry, for police commissioners, for mayors, and for London Assembly members. They want to change it from the supplementary vote to first past the post. Now, the supplementary vote, it's not a perfect system. In a way, the alternative vote system, which we rejected, that's a better system than supplementary vote because there everyone's second preference is taken into account. Whereas in supplementary vote, you only take into account the second preferences of the top two. But it's interesting that they want to try and revert back these posts to first past the post.
Yeah, and a lot of the commentary that's come out about this has perhaps unsurprisingly been focused on the notion that the Tories are trying to gerrymander the elections in some way in order to deliver themselves a more favourable result. Reforms like this, where you're seemingly taking a step back from the point of view of a lot of individuals moving away from a fairer voting system and towards the more traditional first past the post. You know, you can kind of see why people who aren't necessarily looking at things in depth might come to that conclusion. However, when you do dig into this, such accusations don't really hold that much water. Stephen Bush from The New Statesman did some top-level analysis on this. What he worked out was that, roughly speaking, everything remains pretty much static. The only real losers out of a switch in this regard were independents. The one area where potentially the Tories would be making gains under this would be with the London Assembly, where the supplementary and list vote aspect of this system means that they are not the largest party despite on the London Assembly, despite winning the most constituency seats.
And I suppose list systems are used often by people to give a vote to a smaller party, yeah, which would make sense. The Stephen Bush analysis is interesting and does. I think there's a couple of mayoralties. There's a couple of elections. there's a couple of mayoralties that the Tories would not have won under first past the post that they did under supplementary vote because of the transfers. And actually, I think Sean Simon, the George Lazenby of the West Midlands, I think he probably would have won if we'd have had the first past the post rather than supplementary here, because it was very, very close, only about 4,000 votes in it, as you'd have known, because you all subscribe to Not Enough Champagne on iTunes, so therefore also get the Birmingham Fabians podcasts where LG and I have talked about this. It was very close, there was 4,000 votes in it, and I think a lot of Green Lib Dem voters would have probably voted tactically for Labour on the first past the post. So I think it's not strict gerrymandering in the sense that this will benefit the Tories in those elections. I do think, however, it's a way of continuing a first-past-the-post electoral system that really benefits the Tories in Westminster. And I think it's about making sure somehow the supplementary vote doesn't become a Trojan horse to introducing a fairer voting system in Westminster elections. Because I think as soon as you introduce a supplementary vote system, if that ever happens, to a Westminster election, it completely changes the nature of election. And again, another Fabian podcast we did was on the Progressive Alliance, and I said, you don't really need a Progressive Alliance, you need a better voting system, which would allow people to actually vote for their head and their heart. Well, if the supplementary vote allows that, suddenly a whole dynamic of the election campaign changes. I think that's why they want to bring in those changes.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I do think this is more about preventing future changes rather than trying to shift the system as a whole in the Conservatives' favour. Just because, as you say, the more people get used to utilising electoral systems which aren't first past the post and are not just putting that single X on your ballot paper, the more likely they are to accept a change to the Westminster system. And as you say, that has the potential to radically shift the dynamics of national politics.
Because I think the reason why, especially in 2015, you saw a lot of votes for UKIP, a lot of votes for Greens. And I think that's because people have got used to voting for those smaller parties in proportional elections and the European elections. I mean, I think there's still also a sense that people vote in different elections in different ways for different reasons. It'll be interesting to see actually the impact of not having proportional European elections on British democracy, but that's a PhD subject for 30 years' time, I expect. The other interesting change that the Tories want to bring in, I think it was Sir Eric Pickles who wrote a report for them on trying to stop voter fraud at the polls. And one of the things that he says is that voters should provide voter ID when voting. What do you think about that?
A lot of the kind of feedback from the left on this particular issue has been very stereotypical. This is clearly for Conservative advantage, with the words voter suppression being turned out. The reason that this is being said is because in the United States, the Republican Party in a number of different states, such as North Carolina, have put in a number of laws very similar to this. Basically, unless you've got certain types of official forms of ID, you are not allowed to vote. This has resulted in a massive drop-off in ethnic minority voters casting their ballots, most notably among the black community, which in states like North Carolina swings it from being a toss-up state to being a Republican state. I think an awful lot, given that we live in this global age where information is very, very easy to come by, people are seeing the same kind of the activity over in the US, and they're seeing a similar proposal over here in the UK, and their minds are putting two and two together and coming up with four.
They think it's out of the Republican playbook, basically. Yeah,
essentially they think that this is, you know, the Conservatives trying to achieve the same thing. I think there's a number of issues with this. One, what Eric Pickle's report calls for is effectively the inclusion of official forms of ID being passports and driving licenses. Most people in this country do have a passport and a driving license.
I think 9 million people don't have a driving license and 9.5 million don't have a passport.
Yeah.
That was in the census in 2011, which, I mean, that's quite a lot of people.
It is quite a lot of people, but again, when you break that down in terms of the actual proportion of people who are likely to vote as well, is it going to shift the dynamics? Not necessarily too much, especially when you consider that if you don't have those things, you are likely to be from a poorer background. You are less likely to be a Tory voter as a result of that. And again, you may be thinking, well, my God, this is just further proof of, you know, voter suppression and things like that. But these are also the people who don't normally vote.
But then it's an extra barrier for those people who don't vote then to not go to the polling station, mm-hmm. which surely is not a good thing.
Yeah, but again, it depends almost on what forms of ID are actually being required to be brought in. If it's only a passport, well, that does become problematic because that's a lengthy process and costs you, what, 75, 80 odd quid or something like that? I got mine renewed a few years ago, so I can't really recall the exact costs.
Steve Haynes.
I know, it's just dreadful. Whilst with driver's licenses, even if you, most people do learn to drive, and even if you don't have one, you can get a provisional. So what would be interesting about that, those stats there, for instance, for the 2011 census over driving licenses, is that full driver's licenses, or does that include provisionals as well? Because, for instance,
I would assume you probably would be. In terms of the ID thing, I'm not sure what problem it's trying to solve. There were 51.4 million votes cast in 2015. Mm-hmm. Now, of those, there are only 26 instances of allegations of impersonation.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems very strange to devote one of your policies in your manifesto to address a problem where they're basically the problem doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
That's one thing. I think in terms of the passport driver licenses, it is going to be millions and millions of people who don't have one. It is going to be, even if it's not deliberate, I think maybe it's one of those things where self-interest and principle coincide. So even if it's not a deliberate attempt, I just think it's, as you say, they're probably just making the calculation, well, they don't really vote Tory, so it doesn't really matter. And we were talking about this before, and there's a stat that 1.7 million people in this country don't have a bank account. And you were basically saying, how does that even happen? And I think maybe it's the thing where in America, where you talk about this, it is very common for people not to have a passport.
Because they don't need to travel that much. Like, the US is such a big country that you can travel internally within it and get a wide different array of experiences.
And actually in America, again, we're looking up 20% of people in America don't have a bank account. So actually that's a lot of people that you are potentially disenfranchising. And I wonder if there's a bit of a, I can't imagine that Sir Eric Pickles hangs out with a kind of people who don't own bank accounts. Obviously these people, they tend to be people whose English is not great. They tend to be people who are amongst the poorest in our society. I just don't think, and again, I don't really want to generalise, but I just don't think Tory Central Office hangs out with any of these people. And I think they just assume, well, everyone must have a bank account. How else could you function? So I think there's almost a sense of let them eat cake about this.
I mean, that may not be too far from the truth. I mean, I think the interesting potential point, given what we discussed earlier in the programme, was you were talking about what problem does this solve? Well, the problem potentially that it solves is trust in the system. Trust that, you know, the system does work, that you can't just wander in, cast a false ballot and vote multiple times or whatever. And given that during the Brexit referendum we saw quite scarily large numbers of people, okay, it was still a fringe, but there were enough of them for it to be noticeable, of people saying, make sure you vote in pen, not in pencil. It suggests that for an awful lot of people, and you'll probably find this on the left and the right, that there is a distrust in the system, that it's not actually a fair game, that it's somewhere along the line is being rigged. And it might be that for Eric Pickles, this is one of those the policies which, from their perspective, helps to reaffirm trust in the system. And certainly that's the point that I've seen some right-wing commentators make, such as Guido Fawkes, or rather on the Guido Fawkes blog. I don't know if it was necessarily Paul Staines itself who wrote it, but somebody on his staff. I don't think it's a particularly major problem, but I think for the most part it's just one of those things which just sounds like it's common sense. Even if this does have an impact on turnout in, say, inner city urban seats, which is mostly where I would imagine, being slightly stereotypical here, a lot of the people who don't have driving licenses, who don't have passports and things like that, are going to more likely to be living. Even if it does affect like turnout in those areas, it's likely to be marginal, and they're also going to be the people which aren't necessarily going to be noticed or necessarily missed at the ballot box, because as I said before, most of them aren't already voting, and it's going to be very difficult to make a case that actually they're doing something dodgy. Which is why this is one of those issues where the left needs to, if they do want to try and oppose these sorts of measures, needs to actually come up with a common sense narrative of their own as to why this isn't a good idea.
No, there's an interesting thing on the ERS saying that if you end up using things like a utility bill to prove your ID, then actually it would make it easier for there to be false ballots, because it's easy to forge utility bills.
Which is why I think you'll probably find that if we do get something like this coming through, it will almost certainly be official forms of government identification only. Now, the thing to remember here is that official forms of government identification don't just actually mean passports and driving licenses. There are all kinds of different ID cards that you can actually get. These are things that people could potentially get access to for very little money and very easily. However, it's whether or not those particular alternatives are actually widely known about.
I do think that the voter ID thing is something that will be brought in under a Tory government. I'm not so sure about the other thing they say, because the other thing that's in the Tory manifesto is that they'll continue the current boundary review. And I know we talked about this in Democracy at some point, which tells you how long they've been trying to get this thing through. About 4 or 5 years, they've been trying to reduce the number of MPs from 650 to 600 and trying to equalise the amount of constituents in each seat, because it can vary quite widely. That was, I think, scuppered by the Lib Dems when they were in coalition government. Mm-hmm. I think because the Tories wouldn't pass Lords Reform.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I know we have a podcast on that. If you want to try and find it in the archives, you can probably listen to us discuss it while in an advanced state of inebriation. The boundary review was going through the process before David Cameron wrecked the country by calling a Brexit referendum. If you were being quite hysterical on the left, you could call it gerrymandering. And again, there's a few reasons for that. A new vote electoral register was not used, which means when you're trying to equalise the amount of constituents in each constituency, it's quite uneven. Also, you've got the changed individual electoral registration, which I think is going to make a bit of a difference in this election. But I mean, there are some very, very silly seats, certainly in the Midlands. I mean, this seat will become part of Selly Oak and Hales Owen.
Yeah, which, if you're not familiar particularly with the ins and outs of the West Midlands, Hales Owen is in effect, a suburban town on the outskirts of Birmingham. Selly Oak is one of the central areas in Birmingham. It's not part of the city centre itself, but it is fully within Birmingham's boundaries. Linking it up to Hales Owen is a very odd choice, given that they are two, you know, distinct areas. It's very clear how it's ended up being like that, because, you know, when you're working to limitations such as, you know, you need to have a specific number of constituents in each constituency, you're going to have some odd boundaries coming up.
I think this is going to be very hard to pass if there are more Tory MPs, because that means you'll effectively have lots of Tory MPs voting for their seats not to exist, and I can't see that happening.
Well, I think this is probably where the no long-term plans to do anything, no real prioritising of the House of Lords reform probably comes into its own. There are an awful lot of big beasts who could quite easily stand down before the next general election. Your Ken Clarks, for instance. Which means that it's going to be easier for them potentially to get it through, or for people, the other backbench MPs who might otherwise struggle to get one, to actually land a seat under the new boundaries. It wouldn't shock me if it fell through, but I think there is certainly a desire in the Conservative Party to get this through, because they do consider it to be such a wider benefit to themselves.
Yes. If they do get it through, then Labour will have to commit to some sort of electoral reform if it ever wants to be in power ever again. We've managed to talk for more about electoral reform than on the rubbishness of the Tory campaign, which is
sad.
Yeah. There isn't a lot in the manifestos about democracy. As I say, maybe that's because it was quite rushed. Is it also because it's just the legacy of the AV referendum? People just aren't really interested in changing the system?
I think that is the case. I think the political parties, which have always got an element of democratic or electoral reform in there, have continued to have it. The Lib Dems have got it in there. the Labour will have it in there in some various places, I believe. I think even UKIP have got the thing in there, because oddly enough, they're actually, when you go back into their manifestos, they've got quite a strong democratic reform credentials in a way which most progressives would probably agree with.
Yeah, they should have. Nigel Farage campaigning for AV would have made a difference, I think. Yeah.
And he did appear on a few stages here and there with people, but he was sidelined from that debate.
Mm.
That AV campaign and the fact that, you know, democratic reform failed part of that campaign means that there's not really that much of a taste for it amongst Labour, and as such it's not being put as a central campaigning focus for them. But interestingly, I think potentially the being buoyed by the success of the AV campaign and the Brexit campaign may very well be why the Conservatives are feeling like they can get away with putting in let's ditch supplementary vote for mayoral contests.
Mm. And I think what might affect the future of democratic reform in Britain is that the election at the moment looks like we might be seeing a return to two-party politics. But we'll talk about that in our final episode before the election, which will be going out either Wednesday or Thursday, so you can listen to it on the count when you've got your bottle of gin in one hand and your popcorn in the other and you're sobbing into your tissues over the election result.
Or cheering, depending on your party of choice.
Then you can listen to us giving our elections. You can go, how the hell did they get it so wrong? You can follow me on Twitter at paperbackwriter.
I'm at Centre Radical.
James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. And our theme tune is Plucky Good Times by Dave Depper. Happy canvassing. Not long to go, lads.